We're talking about how districts are preparing for fall on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We have three superintendents, and we plan to move through topics. Rough outline here: staffing and enrollment, budget, and starting with pandemic and managing the public health crisis. Teachers and students, what are you thinking about as back-to-school season nears? What should these superintendents know? It's 800-642-1234. Keith Posley is superintendent of Milwaukee Public Schools, the largest district in the state. Keith, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you for having me this morning.
Yes, we also have, good morning, Steve Murley, superintendent of schools and learning at the Green Bay Area Public School District. Steve, welcome back.
Appreciate the opportunity to be here and join your listeners.
And Amy Starzecki, superintendent of the school district of Superior. Amy, welcome to you.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start up in Superior, Amy. At the beginning of July, the CDC put out its latest recommendations for K-12, and they really emphasize that in-person learning is a priority. So how is Superior planning for fall?
Well, we know that our students under the age of 12 still are not ready to be vaccinated yet. So at this point, we are continuing some of the same measures that we took prior to the end of the school year, screening our ventilation systems, teaching students how proper hand washing and other safety procedures. So we'll continue to social distance to the greatest extent that we can, looking at the newest guidelines of 3 feet within our classrooms or within our schools.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to continue to be patient as we watch for the information on vaccines for our youngest students. We'll continue to wear masks and recommend masks for students and staff who are not vaccinated.
Keith Posley, the CDC's recommendations include 3 feet distance. As Amy mentioned there, do Milwaukee schools have the space and capacity to follow these guidelines?
Yes, and we are looking forward to in-person learning for the fall. While the CDC guidelines are really flexible, has some flexibility on for local distances around mask wearing, and we're going to continue to wear our mask. But also when it comes to the 3 feet piece, we are making sure that our students are adhering to the 3 feet policy to the greatest extent possible.
And Steve, in Green Bay, the CDC also recommends masks be worn by all unvaccinated people age 2 and older. Will Green Bay schools be requiring masks?
At this point in time, they're required for students and staff in grades pre-K through 8, and our high school students and staff are optional for summer school. Our board actually meets next Monday night. We've got a listening post scheduled for our community on Sunday evening, and then we've got a special board meeting on Monday to take up the new CDC guidelines and make determinations about what the fall will look like.
What would the fall look like, though, for high schoolers who have access to the vaccine?
Right now, the recommendation is if you are a high school student, you have access to the vaccine. And so if you are vaccinated, it is optional for you to wear a mask. If you're not vaccinated, we strongly recommend that you do wear a mask.
You know, Keith, the CDC recommendations are just that, recommendations. How has that affected your decision making in Milwaukee?
We are following the CDC guidelines as close as possible, as making sure that we are adhering to all of those guidelines as well as the Milwaukee Health Department guidelines, and looking at how those guidelines are compiled, and making sure that we are being safe for all of our staff as well as our students as well as our community.
But you also received considerable pushback about not having those kids in the classroom. How have you dealt with that as a district leader?
Well, we have, our children came back to the classroom in April. And yes, we have seen some pushback, but we have worked with our school communities and our families as well as our students. And we are moving forward with in-person learning.
We're talking with Keith Posley, who is Milwaukee Superintendent, Amy Starzecki in Superior, Steve Murley in Green Bay area. You can join in. Do you have a child in one of these school districts? What questions do you have for the superintendents? How are you and your student preparing for fall? Has your child been vaccinated? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Amy Starzecki in Superior, you know, vaccines not yet available for students under 12. What does that mean for how Superior schools operate this fall?
Well, similar to the other superintendents, we've been following the CDC guidelines very closely. Our board continues to review and respond to those recommendations, and we've pretty much have followed those throughout the pandemic. So, and we have learned to quickly adjust. We know that one day we could get an announcement that vaccines are available, and then we'll adjust to that. But we will continue to follow the current guidelines, and if that changes in the weeks ahead, we'll get those communications out to our families and our staff.
It sounds like you've had to be just extremely flexible and not plan, but then also not plan at the same time because things will change.
Yes. We've learned to have more than one plan, you know, thinking ahead of what things could look like. And we have learned to adjust, and our families and our staff have adapted very well and are very understanding of the need to adjust when new guidelines come out.
Steve, in Green Bay, how have you learned to adjust and adapt as new guidelines come out?
Well, I think a big part of that has been for us recognizing that the needs of our kids stay relatively constant throughout these changing guidelines. And so providing some level of consistency for them, creating space for them to learn in our current environment, looking for new opportunities. We've got a brand new pre-K-5 online school starting up in order to accommodate those families who are not ready to come back to in-person learning in the fall. And then for the kids that are staying in, recognizing that, you know, we've got challenges in the fall with the Delta variant out there, with unvaccinated kids, and what might support for students who have to quarantine look like in the fall, and how might that be different than what we did last year? So those are some of the things we're working on this summer.
Wait, you know, you're saying a pre-K-5 virtual, does that mean like parents holding back their kids and not sending them to kindergarten yet?
No, they would. They'd send them to school, but okay. We've got a group of folks that aren't ready to come back to in-person school, so This will give them that opportunity to stay online for the school year.
Keith Posley, will there be online or hybrid classes in Milwaukee this school year? What are you offering there?
Yes, we will have an online version K-12 program for all students that are not ready to and families that are not ready to return. We have basically roughly about 1,500 students who have taken that option, and we will be providing services for those students, but also with the opportunity to return to full in-person at any moment's notice of when they're ready to return.
In 1,500 students is a small fraction of your, 75,000 or so students. How do you make sure that those resources are equal between students who are going to the classroom and students who are doing it all online?
That is what we have been doing all this summer, burning the midnight oil to make sure that all of our children receive the same quality education and staying connected with their home school. The children will not lose their spot in their home school, and we are making sure that the curriculum is robust and ready for our young people and that they don't miss anything that they're having in their regular traditional in-person program.
Yeah, I mean, robust and ready. You know, there are difficulties, though, at home in making those connections. I mean, I saw it in my own kids. It's so hard to get that engagement when it's online. How do you make sure that that education is getting through, that it is robust?
Well, there is an opportunity. We have a number of opportunities where our young people are still attached to their home school, and whatever is happening from a social and emotional learning perspective, as well as anything that they want to partake in as in person, such as athletics, forensics, and things of that nature, extracurricular activities, we want to make it a full experience for our students also knowing that they can return at any moment's notice to in-person learning.
Yeah, we're looking at K-12 issues ahead of fall semester with three superintendents. Keith Posley in Milwaukee there, Steve Murley in Green Bay area, Amy Starzecki in Superior. Were you a teacher or school staffer who retired in the pandemic? Did the COVID crisis speed up or delay your retirement plans? How are your student athletes staying safe? What about learning loss? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more conversation here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at challenges in K-12 ahead of fall and how superintendents are preparing on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The new two-year state budget includes about $685 million in new aid to schools and restores two-thirds funding, first time in decades. How do you feel about Wisconsin's funding formula for K-12? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Milwaukee Public Schools Superintendent Keith Posley, Superior District Superintendent Amy Starzecki, and Green Bay Area Schools Leader Steve Murley with us for the hour. So, Steve, the state budget signed into law by Governor Evers this month, it spends $800 million less on K-12 education than the governor originally proposed. What was your reaction to state funding?
I think there's a couple of things. First of all, I appreciate the investment in our kids. I really, truly believe that education is the future of our community, our state, our nation, and that investment in the future is the best thing that we can do as we look forward. So I really appreciate that. A little frustrated that the two-thirds funding did not come with a spending increase. So really what that will be is a pass-through tax reduction for our local communities. Certainly understand people's excitement about that as they look at that, but also recognize that that sets us up for a little bit longer term challenge as we try to meet the needs of the kids in our communities.
And what specifically, what needs are not being met in this budget, Steve?
Well, two of the real keys for us, we've got approximately 22% of our kids are English learners. About 15% of our kids are special education students receiving services through those programs. And the state has not funded those fully. Not to get too wonky here with folks, but the problem with that is when the state doesn't meet the obligation that we have as educators to provide support for those kids, we have to take dollars out of our regular education classrooms to make sure that we're supporting those programs. That failure to fully fund those services really pits kids and programs against each other at the local level. And I don't think that best meets the needs of our communities as we move forward.
Amy, your thoughts there. You know, this budget, the state is going to fund 30% of eligible special education costs. The governor had proposed 50%. What will you see in Superior?
I agree with everything Steve, I think, just said. You know, we transfer approximately $7 million of our budget annually, that general education budget that he was just talking about. We have a $72 million budget. So $7 million that comes out of our general education funding is a significant portion that goes to support our special education programs that are not funded. So we were hoping to see a greater increase in our special education funding. We're glad that it has increased. And like you said, Governor Evers did ask for 50%. So that actually is a lower number than we had hoped it would be.
Keith, go ahead. Yeah. Carry on, Amy.
I was just going to say the other piece that, you know, continues to be a challenge in our district, specifically on the border of Minnesota, is the lack of mental health services that we have for our students here. And we're on the border of Minnesota, and so Medicaid funding becomes an issue because Minnesota's rates are higher. And we're really asked to fund those programs entirely with our social workers and counselors. And so it was disappointing to see that there's not a sustained reinvestment there in mental health for our schools.
Keith Posley, what do you see out of this budget for Milwaukee?
Well, actually, first of all, I'm grateful for the governor's budget, which returns states' fundings for public schools to two-thirds of the cost. However, the governor, I'm sure, would agree that we still need more dollars to adequately fund our public schools, specifically Milwaukee public schools. And one of the things that I will talk about is this whole thing around students with disabilities, as well as our English language learners. And just, you know, if it was even $200 per pupil increase, that is basically roughly, you know, $350 million, which would get us to that 50% for the buy-in annual. So, therefore, that is the two of the big factors that, you know, and I understand as well that there's still over $1 billion that is really have yet to be, you know, funded out. So if, you know, that's an opportunity for us still to do the right thing for our children in the state of Wisconsin.
We're talking with several leaders of Wisconsin school districts. They're on the line as we look at funding for the fall and what the state budget entails. Amy Starzecki is superintendent in Superior. Keith Posley there heads Milwaukee Public Schools. And Steve Murley leads the Green Bay Area Public School District. Steve, per pupil state funding based on enrollment levels, how has the pandemic affected enrollment in the Green Bay Area District?
So right now, what we saw this year was we saw a pretty significant decrease of students at our pre-kindergarten and kindergarten level for the 2021 school year. From a headcount standpoint, we lost about half of our student reduction last year was a population at that pre-K and K level. Part of the presumption of that is parents, especially if you're a first-time parent in the school district. You may have looked at an online option for your youngest kids, your four-year-olds and five-year-olds, and just decided maybe you wanted to wait. So we're presuming those kids are going to come back. But obviously the funding process and the way it works is your future funding is predicated on your past enrollment. So as a district, we've got about 1,000 students fewer than we had. And so that'll be a significant impact when it comes to future funding for the next couple of years for the district. So we've got to plan on that. And then another real significant challenge for Green Bay is we're a low spending district. And that means that back when spending limits were set in the early 90s, we were a low spending, conservative spending district at that point in time. That conservatism carries through as a penalty for our district today. And I guess one of the things that I wish we could see in a future state budget would be a real concerted effort to try to get all of the districts to the same level. And that can't be done in a year, but that could be something that the state could commit to doing over a decade.
So losing 1,000 students to the pandemic would be really trying on your budget.
It will be for the next few years. And we hope that some of those kids are ready to come back this fall and that we see those numbers rebound. But when you look at the rolling average that we use to calculate our per pupil spending limit, those low numbers from last year will be with us each year for the next few years.
Keith Posley, what are you seeing out of enrollment in Milwaukee Public Schools?
Well, last year we saw a decline in enrollment, a slight decline in enrollment, and it was at the pre-K through first grade levels. Those were the classrooms and students that we saw the biggest decline in. However, we have been pounding the pavement and knocking on doors and doing everything possible to regain those students because we know that it's going to be very important that we have those students back with us. And so we're doing everything in our powers to make sure that we can regain enrollment. But we have seen a slight decline due to the pandemic.
Where are those students going?
Those students, a number of situations, they are with child care when their families that had stable child care. Families have shared with us that they were going to keep them in child care. They have just a number of homeschool. We have seen the homeschool numbers go up as well. So there are all, you know, just a number of different places that they are going. And then we had children that were out of the state, you know, when we called and have yet to return. So that's just a number. It's a mixed bag of things that we have learned.
Yeah. Amy, how about you in Superior? What are you seeing out of enrollment?
We saw similar trends as the other districts mentioned. We lost approximately 200 students prior to the pandemic. We had about 4,500 students in our school district, so 200 is a lot. Mm-hmm. We saw the same trends as the other districts did, where families were perhaps not sending their students to 4K or kindergarten last year. And so we're hopeful that we're going to recoup some of those students now who are going to be returning this fall. We did lose some students to other state online programs or even neighboring school districts that may have offered more of a in-person learning option as opposed to our hybrid option last year. So we have not seen that the numbers have regained pre-COVID, that we had pre-COVID, but we are hopeful that that will continue to increase. We typically see more enrollment as we get later into August.
We have the leaders of school districts in Superior, Green Bay, Milwaukee, Amy Starzecki, Steve Murley, and Keith Posley, respectively, as we examine education, staffing challenges, enrollment, taking your questions. Teachers, what are you thinking about as the back-to-school season nears? What would you like superintendents to consider? Is there teacher turnover at your school? How is it being addressed? Be part of this 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're talking through K-12 issues on the morning show. I'm Kay Darcher-Kent. Has the pandemic slowed the pipeline of new teachers and staff? A recent survey by the National Education Association says the toll of the pandemic on educators suggests a severe teacher shortage is coming. Join in on staffing, 800-642-1234. Superintendents Keith Posley of Milwaukee Public Schools, Amy Starzecki of the School District of Superior, and Steve Murley of Green Bay Area Public School District. They stay with us for the hour. Let's bring in Tim now, joining us from Superior. Hi, Tim. What is your question?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I'm curious. I know Wisconsin is one of, I think, about a dozen states that did not expand Medicaid as part of the Affordable Care Act, and I was wondering how that decision by the Republican-controlled state legislature has affected your budgets. Thank you.
Amy, I'm going to first toss this your way, as you mentioned reimbursements on the state line with Minnesota earlier.
This continues to be a significant factor in our school district, as we are a border to Minnesota and Duluth. As a result of the difference in the Medicaid rates between our community and Minnesota, we don't see mental health agencies coming into our city and supporting our students and our families. And so we end up incurring much of those costs on our own budget when we look to hire social workers and school counselors to really address some of the mental health needs that our students are facing. We don't have a wide continuum of mental health supports when it comes to day treatment or residential programs, and our students don't really have access to those things unless they travel many, many miles away to access that. So that is a significant issue in our district, and that was a significant issue prior to the pandemic.
Keith Posley, do you consider that you have a wide continuum of offerings for mental health and the costs associated of offering those for Milwaukee students?
Yes, this is a factor for the Milwaukee Public Schools as well, because we have to make sure that we can go out to high psychologists, social workers, counselors, and to make sure that we could provide that support that is needed for our students, especially around that social and emotional learning piece.
Well, I want to turn to staffing here for a moment. Anecdotally, it seems a lot of teachers and staff are retiring. I can see it in my school. Is that happening in Milwaukee, or is it creating a staffing shortage?
Yes, we understand that this is something that is going on around the nation in our public schools. However, Milwaukee Public Schools is slightly have a lower resignation and retirement this year opposed to previous years. And I believe it has to do with this whole thing around we were able to support our staffs through providing them with the vaccination, as well as virtual work options, as well as professional development to get them geared up for virtual learning. So, however, through job advertisement and job fairs and community engagement opportunities, we have we still have vacancies, but we are working to fill those vacancies. So we're slightly a little higher than we were the previous year on retaining staff.
Yeah, I was going to say, are the vacancies that you see at this point in the summer similar to what you've seen in other summers that haven't involved a pandemic?
Very similar when it comes to our teacher corps and all the other positions. However, our para numbers, paraprofessional numbers, are a little higher than we have seen in the past.
Steve Morelli, can you give us the scene that you're experiencing in Green Bay?
It's parallel to what my colleagues are going through. I think one of the things that that Keith just mentioned, I think really is important to reflect on, right? We've got 4,000 folks on staff here. About 2,500 of them are certified staff, but that means 1,500 perform other support services in the district. We are really struggling to fill those roles. Our board this summer passed a change in our minimum wage. So we will move all positions up to starting at not less than $13 an hour this summer, moving up to $14 next summer and $15 the summer after that, because we simply struggle to fill some of those really key roles. Having associates on our buses to help monitor situations there, food service, our custodial ranks. We struggled this entire last year trying to get those positions filled, and we recognize that those educators also play a key role in the lives of our kids, and we want to make sure that we are adequately staffed. And back to the top of the hour, obviously cleaning and sanitation is incredibly important at this time, so we're working hard to get those fully staffed.
Well, on the issue of teacher pay, let's bring in Tom now in Burlington. Tom, what are your thoughts?
If we could pay the teachers more, we might not have trouble getting teachers. The teachers aren't getting the money. There's a problem, a systemic problem. The contractors, these building contractors, come in and they take over and they pass these bonds to build new schools. And so here in Burlington, we're building a new school, which we really didn't need, and the teachers aren't getting the money that they deserve. And this is a systemic problem, and I wonder if people could address it. The contractors are getting the money and not the teachers. And people say, well, we're spending too much money on schools. Yeah, you're spending too much money on schools, but you're not spending the money on teachers who need the money.
So Tom is saying, Amy, that the wages aren't getting to teachers because they're being spent on other things like building new schools. Your thoughts there?
I agree that, we work hard to maintain a competitive salary schedule for our teaching staff. Over the last couple years that I've been here, we've worked to increase the starting teacher salary. We've also worked to increase longevity pay. So really being able to attract new teachers into the field with that starting pay, but also retaining our staff and showing how much we value their expertise and the knowledge they bring to our school district and wanting to recognize that. It goes back to making sure our schools are properly funded so we're able to increase salaries and have those competitive salaries for teachers, but also for our support staff. As mentioned earlier, we have struggled to be able to fill positions for paraprofessionals, food service, bus drivers, and so wanting to continue to maintain those salaries that they're competitive as well.
Yeah, so why are you unable to fill those positions? What is associated with that?
We compete with other industries for some of those support staff positions. I think bus drivers, we compete with other companies, whether it's public transportation offered through other communities or logistics and other agencies that have CDLs for bus drivers. Sometimes they can offer a better salary or signing bonus than we can. And so we continue to revisit that and think about how do we attract people into become bus drivers or other support staff.
How does filling an open teacher position in the year 2021 compare to what it was like filling a teacher position, a decade ago or decades ago, Amy?
When I first became an administrator, we used to see many, many applications and for one position, for an elementary teacher position. Fast forward to today, and we just don't see the same amount of applications. We're fortunate in Superior that we do continue to attract people who are interested in coming into our community. We we just don't see the same level of applications that we probably did 15 years ago.
Keith Posley, what if I, you know, pose that to you? Are your pools smaller than they were decades ago?
Yes, much smaller. You know, decades ago, you would have one position with a number of different candidates with applications in for that position. Now, you know, we, you know, sometime may have, right now we have fewer candidates that's available for and applying for those positions. But we have done a number of different things around increasing salaries. We agree that teachers should be paid more, as well as all of our employees should be paid more. And also, $15 is the per hour for, you know, it's an entry amount for all staff that's coming in, no matter what position that person may be, you know, as such as food service workers or either building service helpers. You know, we're starting at $15 an hour. And trying to make sure that we build a career lattice to make sure that we can employ more individuals and they stay with us longer. But it is truly different from decades ago, where we had any number of graduates waiting in line for teacher jobs.
Keith Posley there, Milwaukee Public Schools. We have Amy Starzecki in the Superior District, Steve Murley, superintendent in Green Bay. As the back-to-school season nears, we're talking about issues surrounding K-12. And what's on your mind? 800-642-1234. Steve, you know, a survey by RAND looked at issues around teacher stress and mental health and found that teachers are almost twice as likely as other employed adults to experience frequent job-related stress. The CDC in May released similar results. What have you experienced or heard in your district about job stress?
Well, I think that job stress is related to two different things. So first of all, it's the work that the staff have to do. And that was very different this last school year. But then I think it's also directly related to the work that they do, which is working with children. And oftentimes the stress that the children experience comes into the classroom. You know, Amy mentioned it before. There are simply not enough mental health supports for children and families in our community. And so the school district winds up being a place where those issues are brought and resolution is sought. And oftentimes that winds up at the teacher's desk. And so the teacher's not only managing the work stress that all of us have and their own personal family stress, but they're also managing the stress that comes to the classroom through each one of the children that they serve. And that's a pretty heavy load to ask our teachers to carry. And as districts, we struggle to make sure that we've got enough supports in place to provide the assistance that they need as they work with our kids.
Let's go to Jane now in Suamico. Jane, hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask your guests about air handling in their buildings. There was supposed to be money in the federal program to help buildings retrofit, help people build retrofit buildings to improve airflow and prevent not only the COVID virus but other viruses from infecting children and teachers as easily. What's happening on that front?
Jane, thanks. Keith Posley, you go first.
All right. Yes, we have here in Milwaukee, we have spent about $4 million on air quality. We have provided HEPA filters in all of our classrooms and every single classroom within the district. We are also looking at all of our HVAC system air handling units and doing some doing a study on each one on our systems to make sure that we are up and running. We're providing fresh air into the building at 2-hour intervals in the morning, 2-hour intervals in the afternoon, and then this upcoming school year we're going to be doing it 3 times a year, doing it during the lunch period, bringing in fresh air, making sure that all of our windows are optimal so that, you know, fresh air can flow throughout the building. Air quality is a big piece of our plan, our roadmap to readiness to get back to full capacity. And we have earmarked, large amount of money for air quality and trying to get up to the air quality that we need within all of our schools. And all of our schools are at different levels when it comes to air quality. We have some very old buildings, and so therefore making sure that air quality is where it needs to be is top priority for us, and we have started that process.
Steve Murley, I wonder if you could follow up on that, in that, you know, we've seen the federal dollars, the COVID aid, you know, filtering to states. Has that aid made it to your schools so that you can do these things that, that Keith has said with air handling?
Yeah, some of it has. Certainly those CARES dollars have made their way to us. And just to not to repeat, but maybe to I add on to that, you know, one of the things that we've been able to do, we've got a very old infrastructure here in Green Bay, and we've managed to increase the air rotation. So we're circulating our air every 15 minutes minimum in every building. And I don't know how many of the listeners follow things like the airline mitigation efforts, but you know, our goal is to be in line with that, right? We're trying to make sure that we're providing fresh air into every classroom on a regular rotational basis. And essentially the goal will be that the air inside is cleaner than the air outside, and making sure that kids have the greatest opportunity to be in the healthiest and safest environment they can.
K-12 issues front and center. We have three superintendents, Steve Murley there in Green Bay, Keith Posley in Milwaukee, Amy Starzecki in Superior. Still time to talk about issues your school is facing, what to do about learning loss, what to do about the persistent achievement gap for students of color and academic disparities. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking about K-12 education challenges on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Virtual learning has disproportionately affected students of color living in poverty in urban areas. That's data analyzed by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel earlier this year, and it raises concerns about our state's longstanding and massive achievement gap between Black and white students. We have three superintendents this hour: Milwaukee Schools, Keith Posley, Green Bay Area, Steve Murley, and Superior's Amy Starzecki. They're with us for about nine more minutes. Let's go to Mark now, joining us from Appleton. Mark, your thoughts.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Going back to the worker shortage and teacher shortage, and the fact that that's changed over the last 15 years, I don't think it's just coincidence that in between that time, Act 10 was passed, which was really an assault on teachers, not just on their union rights, but on their benefits. Their benefits, their cost a lot more, so the job is a lot less attractive. And it's distressing that good times, bad times, year after year, there's never seems to be the schools are properly funded, that they're not these economic issues. And so that certainly has to be demoralizing and difficult for the administrators you have as guests and, of course, for the entire staff. The things are always, budgets are always tight. People are always looking to have to make cuts. And instead we get, you know, these small tax cuts instead of taking care of our schools.
Mark, thanks. Steve Murley, you on the ripple effect of Act 10 eliminating teachers' rights to bargain about pay, about hours, about conditions on the job.
I think it's more about, you know, thinking about where we are now, where we're going. I really do think that the brightest days for public education lie in front of us. And if we want to ensure that's the case, if we want to ensure that you know, some of our best and brightest choose education as a career, we have to make sure that as a community, and by community, I mean the state as a whole, that we have to recognize that we're all in this together. And, you know, we are, as a state, we're a group of people that come together around shared values. And I think that if you sit down with people and you ask them, a commitment to the future through our children is a shared value that we all have. And one way to represent that is to provide what the listener was just talking about, which is support for our public institutions, including public education. And that means making sure that we place an enormous emphasis on the value that teachers provide to our community as a whole and to the future of our state. And when you do that and you provide that level of respect, and certainly that's shown through compensation, but also through support for public education, you create one of those sustaining cycles that I think is what the Wisconsin idea is all about.
Well, Courtney from Appleton called, couldn't stay with us. And Courtney says, it sounds like these administrators have made strides in increasing wages. But Courtney points out a lot of colleges are eliminating their teacher programs and student loans are incredibly burdensome. It's another issue in finding qualified applicants. Keith Posley, your thoughts there on what Courtney's saying.
I totally 110% agree that a lot of the programs that, you know, when you look at overall the state of Wisconsin, the education program at all of the universities and colleges are you know, getting smaller and smaller, and we have to make sure that we can go to other means and steps. Here in Milwaukee, we've gone to MPSU. Well, we're working with a lot of colleges and universities, as well as trying to become a licensure provider ourselves as a district in order to make sure that we meet the needs around growing our own and looking at our paraprofessionals and staff that we have within our schools to work with them to become teachers and also teacher ed programs for our students and five of our high schools throughout the city. So looking at a number of avenues around that, but also like Steve was saying that we have to make sure that we provide this whole support for our teachers, as well as we have introduced here steps and lanes for our teachers on a pay scale, so everyone knows where they're going to be year by year, and that also helps out as well, I think.
Very quickly, let's go to John in Brown Deer with the achievement gap. John, go ahead.
Thank you for accepting my call. I taught in the Milwaukee Public Schools for 35 years, and I retired in 2001. And from my experience and observations, I noticed that the black students had high achievement aspirations and all of the capabilities and abilities to achieve that, but they just seemed to lack the social support, both from their families and in the broad community, to help them along the way. And I believe that if that could be enhanced, that the achievement gap could be narrowed somewhat. And hopefully that will be so in the future years.
Keith Posley.
John, I was first want to start by saying thank you for your service and dedication to Milwaukee Public Schools children, and they're truly our future. And I would say that we are doing everything possible to build those safety nets that John alluded to around our students before and after school care, working with, you know, tutoring from outside agencies and working to do everything that we possibly can to meet those needs, to provide exposure for our young people throughout the state of Wisconsin, taking them on those learning journeys, those experimental type of field trips, and all of those engaging learning practices that we know that helps to develop in the whole child.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining us and taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Steve Murley is Superintendent of Schools and Learning at the Green Bay Area Public School District. Amy Starzecki is Superintendent in the School District of Superior. And Keith Posley, Superintendent of Milwaukee Public Schools. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This conversation comes to you on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.